It says not for broadcast, but it's so well scripted. I think I should read it. And yeah, maybe it's not true, but this is what was written. Now I have seen it all. The Blue Light Brigade on rail. I listen to Cape Talk most mornings down at Rosebank Station. I garden there. I also use the trains often for pleasure. So I heard that the minister, etc., was coming past. Nothing looked different from what we have been, nothing looked different from what we have been riding on for years. But engine, obviously something special. And yay, it's built in South Africa. The train came past with a large security contingent inside. Then the best, the Blue Light Brigade. But without the lights, an empty blue train with not in service, following a discreet distance behind. Did that really happen? Is it fact or fiction? It continues, just asking for a friend. Was our mayor on the train? He seems not to know that the trains are running. The old skedonk trains are featured on much of the city's website features. As long as the city cannot maintain their subways, underpasses, under road and rail, no way will they be able to run the rail service. Just one of the messages. And as we go to JJ Cornish, Tuesday after 10 o'clock, we speak to our African correspondent who joins us on the line, or is it via Zoom now, for a look at the things going down on the African continent. Lots happening, but of course he focuses on the top three things that he feels is necessary for all of us to spare a thought to. So with breaking news on the African continent, joining me, our correspondent JJ Cornish on his top three picks. Welcome, JJ. It's good to have you.
Bonjour to you, Clarence. Great to be with you, man.
You're taking us to Niger again.
Well, yes. You know, the United States is now talking about getting its two bases there, getting them out. And it's from these bases that they launched the drones that were attacking jihadis around the area. But the coup last July, the Niger moved towards Russia and told the United States they should get out. No surprise. At the time, the U.S. Air Force commander said he expected this to happen. So they've got a group there now talking about this. As it happens on Saturday, six Nigerian soldiers were killed in an ambush by jihadis. The reason why the government of Bazoum was overthrown was because they couldn't contain the jihadis. Well, they turned to Russia, and Russia's not doing much of a job there either. So these bases in Agadez and Niamey are going to close. It's very interesting to see what's going to happen in Niger, because the second story we have is the fact that Sahelian countries, including Niger, are becoming a drug, or becoming narco states. Remember Guinea-Bissau? Once the police in Jamaica and in Panama started tightening up, the South American drug cartels, and they're very, very enterprising, started moving their goods into Europe through Guinea-Bissau and greatly, greatly undermined that country. But the countries of Niger, and let me go through those, Niger, Mali, Nigeria, Chad, Burkina Faso, Mauritania, South Sudan, Sudan, Eritrea, and Senegal, they are all going to suffer if the measures aren't taken. The United Nations has warned that drug smuggling is increasing. And, so this very, very delicate area of Africa, the part where at least, they've had, six coups in the past 3 years, all of them from that area, from the Sahel.
Yeah. And then Rishi Sunak wants to keep election promises.
Well, he does. And yesterday, overnight, the Lords finally caved and gave in, and the so-called safety of Rwanda bill was passed. Rishi Sunak is saying, yeah, here we go. So within 10 to 12 weeks, we're going to be moving asylum seekers to Rwanda. So you take a boat to Britain, arrive illegally, they take you and put you on a plane, and they're paying Rwanda absolutely hundreds of millions of pounds to take them in. And the point is, though, that that legislation, they've used their parliamentary majority to declare what is true or what untrue. I mean, it's the famous piece that all cats are dogs. If you have the majority, you can say what you like. Interestingly, though, both the UN High Commission for Refugees, and that High Commissioner, Filippo Grandi, and the High Commissioner for Human Rights, Volker Turk, have said, please rethink this. You have a proud tradition of offering succor to refugees and asylum seekers. If you come with this, you are setting a hugely dangerous precedent. And, we had Paul Kagame in London just last week saying that they've started to sell properties that were set aside for the refugees, and that the U.S., the United Kingdom was saying, we don't really have clearance for all the flights that we're planning. You know, right now, they've had three cabinet ministers visiting Rwanda to try and jerry this along, but they haven't had any refugees yet. And what they've hoped for is this law, the Safety of Rwanda law, declares that Rwanda is a safe place. But, you know, you can pass a British law that's not going to change the fact that Paul Kagame has the most parlous human rights record in Africa. And you're just not going to change. You can't wish it away. So and the international community and the opposition in Britain is strongly against it. The Labour Party, which looks like it's going to win the election later this year, says it will repeal this. So Rishi Sunak has kept a promise, but it's not a promise.
Yeah, just help us to understand. So asylum seekers are then flown over to Rwanda, and
yes,
they stay there, and what? Rwanda processes them or repatriates them back to their place of origin? What happens in Rwanda?
Well, Rwanda says they won't do this, and that was why, you know, the highest court in Britain earlier this year declared that Rwanda was not a safe place. So along comes Sunak with a law saying, yes, it is a safe place, and this is the law that says it. But effectively, you simply can't get away with that. You know, there's the fact is that they are undermining the human rights. They're undermining the courts if they believe that they can get away with that. And I don't think they can. Do they think that they can stop legal challenges with the law? The whole fact, the separation of powers, means that the courts can look at what has gone through and say, this is legal or not legal. And Parliament will have to look at it again. So I don't believe Sunak's going to be able to keep his promise. The refugee groups say they are going to challenge it. So 10 to 12 weeks, I don't see for a minute that they're going to have people going there. Maybe another cabinet minister or two, maybe Rishi Sunak himself. But, I don't think asylums will be flying there. Asylum seekers will be flying there because they will have to seek a new life in Rwanda.
Now,
Rwanda has offered to keep other asylum seekers and refugees and people like that in from Africa, and they've gone there and they've had an opportunity to stay in Rwanda. Not a single one has chosen to do that. They've all moved on, and because Rwanda has a very, very, very poor human rights record. Well, that's the reality of it.
I get you. And somebody writes, and I guess Rishi Sunak is not a first-generation asylum seeker, but message via WhatsApp. I wonder what Rishi Sunak's life would have been like if his parents were not allowed to immigrate to the UK in the 1960s. The irony of him trying to send refugees to Rwanda is quite a joke. I think that message kind of sums up my feelings on this issue and yours, JJ?
Well, it does, except I wouldn't call it a joke. You know, it's one of those, I think it's an absolute tragedy. And I mean, the one thing about Britain, for all its colonial errors and the rough history that it has, is that it has provided and has obliged the British people to accept that they have an obligation to look after those in trouble and those in need. and they have proudly done this. But along comes Sunak, makes an election promise for an election that he's bound to lose, and he's prepared to sacrifice all of that. Centuries of tradition, he's prepared to sacrifice just to, in a vain attempt, try and stay in power.
We're going to have to wrap it there. JJ Cornish, our Africa correspondent. Merci beaucoup, monsieur. And next up, we are going to talk about getting books to kids. Very, very important. World Book Day it is today. Before I get there, somebody writes, big sigh of relief to hear the amazing news from the big issue. I honestly hoped that the community would pull through and that the scam wouldn't be the end of this amazing publication. May it grow from strength to strength. A book with impact changed me. It taught me so much. Title, Mr. God, This is Anna. Writer Finn, early 19th century, a small homeless 4 to 5 year old girl in London, full of wisdom and an adult taking the time to listen, learn and be taught by her. I read this book in my early 20s. Today I'm 50. I have 3 girls and I still think back to this book a lot. Beautiful, easy to read, not pretentious, life-changing. Edward in Somerset West with that idea. I did ask Amy. Amy said, The 5 People You Meet in Heaven by Mitch Albom. And I've kind of written that down as well. To Kill a Mockingbird. And you said, I forgot what you said, Vicky. Vicky Stark says, the book that changed your life, Conversations with God by South African writer. Oh, okay, you've changed it. Neil Donald Walsh. Yeah, okay, right. It was J.M. Coetzee. The other one, tell us the one. Disgrace. Okay, that's... Vicky's got a whole host of books to throw into the pot. What's the book that you wish to throw into the pot? And we'll discuss it during our time together through till